Welcome to the Baptist Joint Committee Podcast. I'm Jordan Edwards, Communications Associate at the BJC. Today we are remembering the legacy of Dr. James M. Dunn, who passed away on July 4th, 2015. With me today is Brent Walker, BJC Executive Director, who worked with Dunn for several years. Hi, Brent. Thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Jordan. Good to be here.
We're recording this a few days after Dr. Dunn's memorial service. So I know it was kind of a somber occasion, but what did you enjoy about that memorial service?
Just remembering the good things about James's life, talking about them with friends. There were people there that I hadn't seen in some cases years that go way back. And we just had a good time remembering and celebrating James's life, even as we regretted his passing.
Before we get into Dr. Dunn's legacy as executive director of the BJC, how would you describe James Dunn as a person?
Well, he was a wonderful person, a good, dear friend. I think what really comes to mind when I think of James was that he really did care about people. He just loved people. Reached out, was involved in their lives, and just had an incredible extended family of good friends. That, you know, he and Marilyn didn't have any children, but my goodness, he affected so many young people. His adopted youngins, as he would call them. So that idea of James, the caring person, the loving person. But you know, he was also, as is the case with many great men and women, something of a contradiction in many ways. You know, he could be very tough and tender at the same time. He could be prophetic and pastoral. He could be mean and charitable. He spoke with that down-home Texas twang, sort of a high-pitched tone when he got excited. But, you know, at the same time, he could turn around and pray in the King James. Believed deeply in freedom, but also in responsibility at the same time. So, wonderful guy. We're sure going to miss him.
Though his list of accomplishments is long, Dr. Dunn might best be remembered for his concept of soul freedom. Let's listen to a clip from The Intersection, which is a video interview he recorded with journalist Bill Moyers in 1996.
Why do Baptists have such a special interest in this whole area of this intersection between church and state, the separation of church and state?
Real Baptists have, from the outset on their theological basis, been insistent upon soul freedom. Now, soul freedom means for the Baptists the recognition that they're made in the image of God, and that any religion that's worth anything has to be intimate and individual and personal. If it's not, it's not worth anything. Now, theologically, that's the rootage. Made in the image of God and therefore able to respond to God. Responsible, responsible, and if responsible, free. And that's the heart of it.
So, Brent, why was soul freedom so important to Dr. Dunn?
Dr. Dunn regarded soul freedom as the theological taproot for everything else. You know, it goes to the very essence of our relationship with God, that God-infused liberty of conscience that God gives each of us, not because we're Baptist or Christian, but because we are human beings. And for that relationship with God to be true and genuine, it has to be based on love and voluntarily entered into. So it all starts with soul freedom, that treasured relationship that we have with God, and from that everything else goes out. Religious liberty, that the ethical imperative that follows on the theological principle of soul freedom, that says the soul freedom that I enjoy with God, I want everybody else to have that same freedom in society and in the country and in the world, everybody.
Now, Brent, at the top of the podcast, I mentioned that you worked with Dr. Dunn for several years here at the BJC. So let's talk about life at the BJC under Dr. Dunn. Tell me about getting hired to work here. Did you have a relationship with Dr. Dunn before you joined the staff?
I did not, other than the interview process. I had come to Washington in my third year in seminary to attend an Americans United for Separation of Church and State conference that I was interested in, and at that conference was able to meet James and Buzz Thomas, who was then the general counsel for the Baptist Joint Committee, and we got to know one another at that point. And James mentioned the fact that they were looking to hire another lawyer. I think they had known about my story through some publications in the seminary magazine, but so we got to talking and went from there, and in short order decided to join one another and come to Washington. So that was how it got started, and 4 or 5 months later the Walker family arrived in Washington, and I've been here ever since.
How did Dr. Dunn make that transition work for you? Because it was a difficult time for you. I mean, you had come from, you'd been a lawyer for several years and gone to seminary, and then you were at a church, so you come up here. How did Dr. Dunn make that transition easy for you?
First of all, it was a good fit. The position at the Baptist Joint Committee was a nice blend of both my legal background and my commitment to ministry and interest in Christian ethics and Baptist principles. So it was a good fit to start with. But he was very accommodating, allowed me to preach a good bit, not just about Baptist Joint Committee matters, but preach at churches, to engage in other kinds of ministry along with the work of the Baptist Joint Committee. So he was very sensitive to where I was coming from and where we were headed with the Baptist Joint Committee.
What was it like at the BJC in the early 1990s when you, Dr. Dunn, and Buzz Thomas were part of the diverse coalition that worked on the creation of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act?
Well, it was certainly an interesting time, and Buzz and James and I, all three, were involved, although Buzz pretty much led the effort from the Baptist Joint Committee's point of view, and also led the coalition that lobbied for the passage of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. But it was an interesting time. It was a heady time. We were all reeling from the Supreme Court's unfortunate decision that essentially gutted the Free Exercise Clause in the First Amendment in the Native American Peyote case. And we were, of course, pursuing a legislative fix to provide additional protection for the exercise of religion statutorily, if not constitutionally. So, we knew we were doing something important that if successful, would have ramifications throughout the country in our legal system and in our scheme for protecting religious liberty. It was a fun time.
And I feel like that was when Dr. Dunn was best in his element as executive director, making phone calls, making connections, and kind of
sure.
Doing what Dr. Dunn did best, you know?
Right. Yeah, no, absolutely. He was involved with it, and golly, I never forget the day where he came out and said, "What we need is a little legislative Viagra." Actually, that was a couple years later when we were working on a follow-on piece of legislation after part of the Religious Freedom Restoration Act was struck down as unconstitutional. But that was James, all right. Legislative Viagra. He hit the nail on the head.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go back to something that's sometimes overlooked when it comes to Dr. Dunn's legacy, and that's the Equal Access Act. Why was this piece of legislation so important, and what role did Dr. Dunn and the BJC play in its passing?
We were very much involved in its passage. This was 6 or 8 years before I came to the Baptist Joint Committee. Essentially, what it did was ensure that the religious clubs in public secondary schools could be able to meet on the same footing as other non-curriculum related groups could meet. It was a very important piece of legislation that Dunn was very much involved with, and as was the case with the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, the Equal Access Act had bipartisan support, so he worked with both the Republicans, Mark Hatfield, and others on the Republican side, as well as Democrats, to pull together a coalition to pass this very important piece of legislation to ensure the rights of students to meet on campus before and after school. And I think it also was indicative of James's desire not just to criticize bad ideas, but to pursue good ideas. It really got started with James's and others' opposition to President Reagan's call for a constitutional amendment on school prayer. He opposed it, but said, you know, let's do something positive. Let's do it the right way. Let's make sure that students can talk about religion, actually worship voluntarily on campus before and after school, as long as the government, as long as the school was not involved in it other than to supervise. So as long as it was student-initiated, student-led, it was perfectly permissible. So yeah, he not only stood up and criticized a bad idea, but he turned around and pursued a good idea that would reach positive results.
Dr. Dunn gave many passionate and quotable speeches about religious liberty and keeping church and state separate. In fact, he has a whole book that the BJC put together several years ago called Truth with the Bark on It. Brent, what's your favorite James Dunn quote?
Well, Jordan, it's hard to pick one because there's so many good ones. And most people are familiar with his quote about theocracy. He would often say, in opposition to a theocracy, that the problem I have with theocrats is they all want to be theo. And, you know, every time he would say that in a speech, he'd get this big laugh. And actually, one time when I was still in seminary, after I had planned to come to the Baptist Joint Committee, I thought, I'm going to go to the library and check out all the James Dunn tapes that I can find. So I've got a whole bunch of them and started listening to James preach and teach and lecture on tape. And I heard that Theo line, and I don't know where it was or where he was speaking, but there was, of course, uproarious laughter after he said it. And while the laughter was going on, you could hear him say, and he must have been on a panel because it was almost like he was whispering to somebody next to him in the midst of all this laughter. Obviously, he thought he was outside the coverage of the microphone. You know, if you ever get one of those, never get it up. Just keep using it. Keep using it. So he kept using it. He kept using the Theo line, and every time he used it, it was not just that it engendered this laughter, but it was a poignant point that he was trying to make, that whose religion are you going to establish when you talk about privileging Christianity or establishing something akin to a theocracy. So it was typical James Dunn. And there's another one that I've often enjoyed, and it has to do with, again, this combination of freedom and responsibility. It was not an either-or thing. For James, it was a both-and. The quote is, "Freedom is not absolute. No one is free as a bird. Only a bird is free as a bird." To me, that always that stuck. Continuing, he said, "We are not free without responsibility. Freedom and responsibility are like two sides of a coin, inseparable. And no matter how thin you slice it, the coin of responsible freedom always has two sides."
And it wasn't that he just had these canned phrases that he would say. He would come up with stuff on the spot, too. He was good.
He could, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or if he didn't, he could deliver it like he did. It was always fresh.
Which
it was,
is just
it was
as important. Fresh. That's
yes,
just as
yeah,
important.
Absolutely. It was fresh and,
yeah,
and clear and always had a point to it. It wasn't just for the laugh. It was to make a point that he, with his inimitable humor, could make.
Thank you so much for your time, Brent. But before we go, how will you remember James as a person? What's going to stick with you?
Well, his humor, his incredible intelligence, the interest that he took in the lives of so many people. As I said before, the fact that he cared about people and loved people was always front and center in his personality. But, you know, just visually, when I think about James visually rather than what he was inside or what he said, I think of his bow tie, wearing a bow tie. I think of him talking with his bony fingers as much as with his mouth. His kind of smallish body, but notwithstanding that, he had such a huge presence in the room that
he was kind of like this tornado when he came into a room.
You know, Buzz Thomas has said that James is a lion trapped in the body of a house cat. And I think that's apt. So I'll give Buzz credit for that. That visual image that will always be impressed on my mind, and just the fact that he was such a wonderful, giving, caring, intelligent, funny person.
Yeah. Now, I think it's important, we didn't really talk about this earlier, but I think it's important to acknowledge that after he left the BJC, he taught for years and years at the Wake Forest University School of Divinity. So he never gave up on his principles. He never backed down. He never stopped teaching and continuing what he believed in to the next generation. So can you talk
about...
Exactly
right. Yeah. And not only did he not recede from it, he intensified it. So, he, you know, when he left here, he got involved with transmitting, transferring that passion, that intelligence, that learning to another generation of Baptists on the front line.
Yeah.
As good a preacher as he was, as good a lobbyist, as good a public policy advocate, he was a consummate teacher and could just get the message through to young people. Again, not just brain to brain, but heart to heart, and they knew he cared about them as persons as well as what they were supposed to learn in class.
Yeah, I was really impressed and moved by how many of the people who had kind things to say about Dr. Dunn were younger people, were people in their 20s and 30s
right.
who had
mm-hmm.
the chance to meet him
yeah.
later in his life. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Brent. Let's close by listening to your eulogy from the James Dunn Memorial Service that you delivered a few days ago.
Good morning. I am honored and humbled to have been asked to say a few words about my mentor, my colleague, and my friend. I first spoke with James Dunn when he and Buzz Thomas were aiming to hire another lawyer during my senior year in seminary. The interview went well, and I was hired, and the Walker family moved to Washington. But I had no sooner arrived on the scene than the Southern Baptist Convention defunded about half of the Baptist Joint Committee's budget. You remember, right? I figured I was a goner. You know, last in, first out. How it works. But James stepped up and held the staff together. No one was laid off. No salaries were even cut. And he steadily righted the Baptist Joint Committee's finances. It's no overstatement to say that James saved not only my job, but the Baptist Joint Committee. I last spoke with James on a conference call a few weeks ago with the Baptist Joint Committee Endowment Committee, of which James, in retirement from the Baptist Joint Committee, was president. And we were discussing where to place a very generous and unexpected bequest in the endowment. Well, the $900,000 endowment, which we had when James retired in 1999, is now, under his tutelage, $5.5 million and growing. And I have my James Dunn Legacy Circle bow tie on this morning. You can have one too. In between those two conversations were 26 wonderful years of friendship, baptistifying together, and co-laboring for religious liberty. James, more than anyone else I've ever known, was comfortable in his skin, as they say. And that's a bit peculiar because he was never really comfortable in his clothes. Yeah. It was often said that he wore his clothes out from the inside out, right? James, the inveterate activist, the peripatetic doer, the worrisome wiggle worm, yes, from the inside out. He came into my office one day and asked me to go with him during lunch to Raleigh's department store to buy a couple of new suits. They had a sale going. Marilyn says that the ones I got are frayed at the collar and the cuff. And he paused for a moment and with a twinkle in his eyes said, I'm afraid she's right. So we went off together and bought a couple of new suits, and they were on sale, sure enough. But James refused to allow the store to hem the pants because they wanted an extra $5. Yes, James Dunn was extravagantly generous but frustratingly frugal, often at the same time. Yes, he was able to live with integrity amid the many ambiguities, tensions, and polarities of life, between faith and reason, between the individual and the church, between freedom and responsibility, between no establishment of religion and the free exercise of religion, between the glory of God the Father and the sinfulness of all of God's children. He once told an assembly of American Baptists, there is a divine dimension to our fellowship, but it's toted around in the brown paper bag of our humanity. One of my favorite Dunnian quotes. But one thing that can be said about James that pervaded his entire being was that he cared about people. He loved people. Of course, Marilyn dearly, but also his co-workers, his thousands and tens of thousands of friends and fans, his hundreds of students, his adopted youngins. James put it so poignantly and characteristically at his BJC retirement gala 16 years ago when he told the 200-plus friends and colleagues in the room, there was never a guy in the back seat of a parked car that said, I love you, that mean it as much as I do. He did. I went back and checked the tape. I saw it. Yep, that was James, all right. I heard James say time and time again, I am done, D-U-N-N, but I'm not yet finished. How true that has always been. And he did spit in death's eye about a half a dozen times. But now he is done and finished. But James and his legacy will live on in the Baptist Joint Committee, at the Wake Div School, here in Knollwood Baptist Church, and in every one of us. Thanks be to God for James Milton Dunn.
That was BJC Executive Director Brent Walker delivering a eulogy at the James M. Dunn Memorial Service. Thank you for listening to the Baptist Joint Committee podcast. For more podcasts, visit us online at www.bjconline.org/podcasts or subscribe to our iTunes channel.